Yes, and welcome to Mind, Body and Chow. And it's another bumper edition, and we've got Ronald Avergy, who's taken out some time. He's on his way back from Nelspruit. He's going to be joining us, inshallah, in a few seconds' time. Ronald will be joining us for that discussion. We remind you, today's discussion is about exercise during pregnancy, and that will take place after the on-air workout. So please send your details through to 48855, or you can WhatsApp 072-786-1548. You can tweet as well at EJAZ_K. Any questions you have regards to exercise during pregnancy? But now it's time for...
Hello. Is anybody out there?
Interact now. SMS 48855. WhatsApp 072-786-1548. Or tweet EJAZ at EJAZ_K.
Can you hear me calling?
Don't be. It's time for verbal fitness sessions on Mind, Body and Chow.
Indeed, it is time for the verbal fitness sessions, and we joined on the line by Ronald Avergy. He's a fitness and wellness expert. He joins us on the line now. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh, Ronald.
Wa alaikum salam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. How are you, brother Ijaz? Is the listeners?
Yeah, alhamdulillah. Doing brilliantly, and hoping you're doing the same.
Oh, very much so, very much so. Excited to be on the African roads, keeping safe and enjoying the scenery out there.
Brilliant stuff. And the show hasn't yet started properly, and we've already got a message from our brother Nizam out in Mauritius. He says, Assalamu alaikum, great program, looking forward to the exercise, Nizam in Mauritius.
You know, that's amazing, because, I mean, it surely shows it works. And if you're in Mauritius, you want to keep fit and healthy, you've got the beautiful environment there to utilize as your gym. So, brother Nizam, I hope you really enjoy this workout, because we're focusing on muscle tone for NH. In life, to really help you strengthen those bones, tone those muscles, and get into shape.
Brilliant stuff. Let's go for it, Ronald. Let's go.
All right, so first things first, we're going to start off and focus on key muscle groups, you know, from the upper body to the lower body. So we're going to start off with the upper body. So the first thing you're going to do is, of course, have a seat on a chair or a bench, any firm surface.
Right.
Not really a bed, because it's quite soft. I want you to sit on the edge and keep your knees bent 90 degrees. From that position, I then want you now to place your palms next to your buttock and slightly move your buttock off the bench or the chair. This is called the tricep dip extension.
Yes.
So what we're going to be doing is slowly bending the elbows down, dropping the buttock below the surface of the chair till your elbows reach 90 degrees, and then pushing it up all the way till you straighten your elbows. So you're going to drop the buttock down and push it up. Now this exercise, if this is too easy for you, what you can do is, obviously, put your feet further out, put your feet upon another surface, but you're aiming to do about 15 to 20 repetitions of this exercise. So let's keep going. Dip it down. Dip it down. Dip it down. Keep dipping it down. That's it. That's it. Keep it going. Now focus on bending the elbows and straightening. Don't flare the elbows out. Keep them tucked in to ensure that you really get a great workout on the tricep area.
Hopefully my chair is not too sturdy, so if I fall down, just carry on.
But that's where you have to really engage your core, and health and safety becomes important, brother. But nonetheless, keep it going. All right, now from that position, 4, 3, 2, 1, and then relax it down. All right, moving on to the next exercise. Straight away, we're going into a modified push-up. So you could either go flat on the ground there on your tummy, you could either lean against the table, or you could do it upright against a wall. Now, men and women, young and old, can do this exercise irrespective of your strength ability. And I love the push-up, brother Judge, because it works every muscle in the upper body.
Of course, yes.
So in your position, hands wider than shoulder width apart this time. And no matter which position you use, I want you to bend the elbows down, hold it all the way down till your chin touches the bench, the wall, or the floor, and come up halfway, down all the way, up halfway. So you don't go up and down all the way. You do it halfway to ensure a constant tension in the chest, triceps, and shoulder areas. And you aim to do 20 repetitions. Keep it going. Push up and down. Push up and down. Push up and down. Go at a comfortable pace. You don't have to go at the pace we prescribe. If it's slower for you, that's also okay, allowing you to focus on those muscle groups.
And I'm testing out the durability of our table here.
I'm sure it's very durable there, and I'm sure that the engineers are trying it too. I hope they are. All right, and relax it down. Next exercise, upper body is now done. The next one we're doing is something called the lunge, but the lunge pulse. So what I want you to do is stand upright, feet shoulder width apart, take your right leg back, and I want you to bend both knees until you form a 90-degree angle in both knees. Then come up 5 centimeters and then down. Up 5 centimeters and down. This is a beautiful exercise because it helps shape and tone your entire leg, your buttock, giving you shapeliness in the leg, but also helping you maintain muscle integrity. So if you do have a stiffness or arthritis in your hip or knees, this exercise is brilliant to help mobilize those joints. So you're doing 15 repetitions on each leg. All right, brother, change legs. Let's go. All the way down and pulsate up and down. Pulsate up and down. 5 centimeters up, 5 centimeters down. Keep it going. 5, 4, 3, 2, and 1, and relax it down. Now, as you can see, I focus on one real exercise for the lower body to ensure that we work most of those muscle groups, but we've also focused on the upper body with a big and a small muscle group exercise because many people will see results in the upper body before they see results in the lower body purely based on the fact that there's often less fat in the upper body and more in the lower, and that really will inspire people to keep fit and keep exercising.
Brilliant stuff. That last exercise was not too much movement, but it's amazing how much intensity there was, Ronald.
You know, I focus on intensity in exercise and a focus exercise. Many people, when they do ranges of motion that are too big, you know, they tend to work gravity and momentum more than the muscle. So when you concentrate on a smaller range of motion, you really find it an effective and efficient exercise, especially if you don't have a lot of time on your hands to do the workout.
I was just going to say, there's no more that excuse that I don't have any time. I mean, 3 or 4 minutes is enough, I think, just to get it started off, and you can still feel like you had a proper workout.
You know, that's what it boils down to. Today, in my talk that I did in Nelspruit for a corporate, I asked everybody what was the excuse for not exercising.
Yeah.
And they said to me, majority of the people, I don't have time. And I said, that is no longer an excuse. Just like we make time for salah, it is already prescribed in our diaries, we have to make time for exercise. And if you have 5 minutes or 10 minutes available, do it. But know what you do really effectively, do it focused, and you will achieve results.
Now, Ronald, what's the different intensities of exercises we should be looking at, you know, in terms of everyone's separate goals?
You know, when it comes to intensity of exercise, it really depends what your intention is. So if you haven't exercised for a long while, irrespective of what your goal is, whether it's just to get active, or whether it's to lose weight, or whether it's just to manage a disease of lifestyle, because many people have those, you know, you start off with a lower intensity exercise to allow your body to adapt to the exercise. Because if you... Let's look at running, all right? If you haven't exercised in a very long while, and Brother Judge, you know this, if you haven't played football in a long while, you suddenly get into the field and you start sprinting up and down. One is you're going to be out of breath, two is you risk injury, and three is the next day you can't move.
That's right.
Because the intensity of the exercise was too hard for the body because you're not conditioned for that. So what you then do is start off small. So if you want to start jogging or running and you want to lose weight, start by walking first. Walk for a kilometer or two. You then increase the intensity once you're used to that to jogging. And once you're done with that, you can then increase it to a light canter and eventually bring in sprints. Because by increasing your intensity, you challenge your body to not plateau with results. Because many people say, I've exercised for a long while, I'm wanting to lose weight, the scale's not budging anymore, what do I now do? And the answer is you change the intensity of the exercise to ensure that you keep on challenging the body. Because with exercise, your body gets stronger, your body adapts very quickly, and if you keep doing the same thing over and over, you're like a hamster on a hamster wheel. You're going nowhere slowly.
Definitely. And just a reminder, the lines are open, 011-854-1548. If you've got any questions for Ronald, he'll be able to tackle it. One subject that we should be discussing now, Ronald, is exercise during pregnancy. This is a good one, and you can send your questions through an SMS 48855 as well as WhatsApp 072-786-1548. Exercise during pregnancy, Ronald?
Yeah, man, this is such an important topic, and some of our listeners have actually emailed me questions regarding this.
Good stuff.
And the answer is very simple. You know, if you haven't exercised before you got pregnant, don't suddenly think you're going to start high-intensity exercise programs when you are pregnant. When you're pregnant, your key focus is to look after yourself as a future mom, and also to look after your fetus or baby growing inside of you. And by exercising at a high intensity, if you haven't done it before, puts strain on your body and also on the baby, the growing baby's body. So what you need to find is a balance. In the first, second, and third trimester, we separated there. I would always advise people in the first trimester, there's a lot of development, there's a high risk of miscarriage, you know, so you can bring in light stretching exercises, maybe a light pool exercise, like swimming in the pool gently and relaxing to offer your body resistance, but nothing too strenuous to put pressure on the development of the baby. In the second and third trimester, I would always advise people to do exercises that don't involve weight bearing on the knees. So you don't want to jog, you don't want to run, because that causes bouncing activities and also puts high impact on the hips and the knees. So you do things like stationary cycling. You do things like aqua aerobics. You do things like swimming, which offers you resistance in an almost weightless environment. You do things like stretching, which is very, very important, and also strengthening of the back muscles, because the back takes a lot of strain as you move forward in your trimesters, because you get a big tummy in the front because the baby is there, causing an S shape in the back, which is called the lordotic curve, which puts the lower back under a lot of pressure. So you want to relieve that discomfort with some light yoga and, of course, some stretches to really loosen up the body. Many moms that are pregnant also complain about the numbness or the nerve sensation in the lower body. So stretching becomes so important to release that tension and to really force those muscles to relax, to increase your blood flow and not put pressure on the nerves. So my advice is always, Brother Ijaz, exercise is always important. But when you're pregnant, you need to be conscious of what you do. Always talk to your gynecologist to tell them what you're busy with from a food and an exercise perspective, and get the advice of an expert to put together the right plan for your body to ensure that you enhance your pregnancy rather than cause damage in the long run.
I'm going to try and squeeze this one question in, sister, saying, I'm always fit but have fallen pregnant. Will I be able to get my figure back quickly the way that celebrities do?
You know, ignore the celebrities out there, because they have, you find that they give birth today, they surface 3 months later. You know, a classic example is that one Kardashian gave birth, only now is she going onto her social network platforms, and that's 3-4 months after the birth of the kid, because they go under intense possible surgery solutions as they give birth. Second thing is they go into hiding, because they then go under hectic other therapies. But if you've been active and fit before, or even if you haven't, you know, within the 6 weeks after you give birth, give your body a chance to recuperate. But by then getting active and eating healthy in the right way, you can definitely get your body back. I've had clients who fitted into clothes that they fitted into before they got pregnant and looking better in it, because we gave them the right exercise strategy and eating strategy to get their bodies back. So it is possible, my sister. It is possible.
I'm going to try and squeeze one more in. The sister says, my last pregnancy was a miscarriage. Some people said I shouldn't exercise for the first 3 months. Is it true? What can I do to stay fit? Please, before this pregnancy, I was at the gym 6 times a week and did cardio and weights.
You know, my advice to the sister is this, is that, you know, anything could cause a miscarriage. In some instances, yes, it could be high intensity exercise. In other instances, it's just the body's reaction to the pregnancy. There's no predictive indicator thereof. But if you have been going to the gym regularly, it's something that you enjoy. You know, you enjoy the rush, you enjoy the feeling on your body. My advice in the first trimester, especially if you have had previous miscarriages, is decrease your intensity, but get more focused with your exercises. So if you have been doing high intensity, drop your intensity slightly, but still go in and find the right exercises to do. I would advise that sister to please email us, Brother Jazz, so I could get more information out and advise in a more scientific and strategic way to support her in an endeavor to retain the pregnancy, but also with her personally to keep fit and healthy, which she enjoys clearly.
Brilliant stuff, Ronald. Jazakallah khair for your time, brother. You have a safe journey back home, and we'll pick it up tomorrow, inshallah.
Ameen, my brother. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Yes, Ronald Evergy there with the Verbal Fitness Sessions on Mind, Body and Chow. And now for the second segment, in a few seconds' time, we'll be joined by Janine Chamos. We're talking about comfort foods. Stay tuned to Mind, Body and Chow.
Hello. Is anybody out there?
Interact now. SMS 48855. WhatsApp 072-786-1548 or tweet Ijaz at EJAZ _ K.
Can you hear me calling?
Here we go.
Yes, indeed, we'd like to hear you calling. So call 011-854-1548 if you've got any questions regards to comfort foods, which we'll be speaking about with Janine Shamos, who joins us on the line now. Good afternoon and welcome, Janine.
Yeah, thank you so much. Great to be here.
Thank you so much for joining us once again. My favorite topic, food, right? So let's get straight into it, Janine. Food expectations. What do we expect from food, or why do we expect food to make us feel a certain way or taste a certain way? For example, like if you're going on a date with your wife or husband.
I think we have food is always part of our history kind of thing. So, you know, growing up as a child, there were foods that you probably looked forward to eating.
Mm-hmm.
And as an adult, I know I had cake yesterday,
mm-hmm.
and I had this mouthful, and I'm like, this brings back a memory. Where is it from? And I realized that it was a cake that my mom made when I was like 5 years old, but that taste was there.
Yes.
And those kind of memories are very much associated with food, and we kind of think, you know, I'm feeling down, chocolate will work, or, you know, a certain comfort food will make me feel a certain way. We get cravings for certain food. And when we're going out, you know, I think very often with our partners, we're going to maybe in-laws or family or friends, there might be food that we're really looking forward to that maybe our partners don't eat, and there's that kind of expectation, do I eat it? I know they don't like it, but I really like this food. Should I eat it? Shouldn't I eat it?
Mm-hmm. Now, Janine, the power of eating together, right, as a family, sharing food, how is it a way of expressing love or intimacy?
It is so important that, you know, we share meals together. Having food together is, for me, very much, you know, if someone makes me lunch or dinner, it's so much more meaningful than going out to a restaurant or getting takeaways. A lot of love goes into cooking, and the process of eating and sharing a home-cooked meal allows us time to de-stress from the day, to connect with each other on a different level, that we're not in front of the TV, we're not on our cell phones, we're not listening to something. We're there for each other, and we're connecting over food, which is always something that brings people together. You know, we sit in a kitchen and cook together and eat together and talk about food, and there's a different level of intimacy that comes in. It's not so formal, it's not so, you know, work orientated. And I often think of, you know, Nelson Mandela, for example. He used to talk about tea diplomacy.
Mm.
And if someone came into his office, he would never sit behind a desk. He would physically get up, make you a cup of tea, and sit on the couch and share a cup of tea. And it didn't matter who that person was, but he would never separate with the table. They'd always be sipping tea. It gives you time to think, to connect, to de-stress, and to focus on something besides your life and your stress at that moment.
Is food one of the mechanisms to keeping families together?
I would argue yes. Maybe because I come from a food family, I don't know.
Me too.
But food was always a very essential part of growing up for me, and even now, you know, very often we have friends over and we'll cook together in the kitchen, you know, open plan kitchens, and people sit around and we cook and we eat over the dinner table. And I think that sense of bringing families together and allowing that space, so much can get in the way of family togetherness and connectivity. That, you know, I look at so many people who there's dinner on a tray in front of a TV. I think that's not okay. It takes all the beauty about eating special food and connecting with each other. So having that part that we can cook together, eat together, and spend time together, not just in the same room, is for me very, very important.
Now, Janine, you know, eating out of your comfort zone, crossing cultural lines, eating different food, what is the etiquette?
I think very important is to know what culture you're going into. So are you going into a totally different cultural kind of platform where you're going overseas and maybe the food is just slightly different? But understanding what is it that you're going to be eating and making sure that people understand where you're coming from. So if you don't eat meat, for example, going to a braai would be disastrous for everybody. If you don't tell people, listen, I don't eat meat, please don't feel offended if I don't do this. But, you know, having that kind of open mechanism where you and your host or hostess doesn't feel uncomfortable because you're not eating something. Asking the question. So if you're not sure what something is, ask. What's in it? You know, make it perfectly obvious. I went to a function recently, and it was a Hindu function, and I didn't know what was in the one thing, one dal sort of curry, and I said, what is in it? How spicy is it? Because I don't deal very well with spicy food. And, you know, that just kind of dealt with, this is where I'm coming from, this is what I'm eating, and happy to try it and happy to, you know, eat my way through stuff. But being honest about your expectations, again, that sense of this is what I'm comfortable eating and this is what I'm not. Having that open communication. And if you don't like something, be honest about it. There's no shame in that.
Definitely. You're listening to Mind, Body and Chow on Radio Islam International. This segment, we're killing two birds with one stone. We're talking about the mind and food as well. So comfort foods is the discussion. You want to add your two cents, call us on 011-854-1548. You can SMS 48855, or you can WhatsApp us on 0727861548. Also, Twitter is an option. You can tweet me at EJAZ_K and get those communications coming through. Now, Janine, the language of food. What the food we prepare and the way we eat it says about us. What does it say about us?
So again, looking at how I eat food, which is maybe not how other people eat food, but for me, food is very important. And eating food is important. And I think, you know, if we sit down, when I was young, I remember going to a restaurant and there was a man sitting, it was a sort of hotel and it was the lobby or whatever, but there was a guy eating grapes with a knife and fork. And I just thought, how sad. Just put them in your mouth, eat them. You know, and I think that kind of tells you a lot about someone, you know, how comfortable they are in a situation maybe. I think, you know, if I look at food, I like hand food, you know, just digging in and scraping up, you know, gravies and lopping up stuff like that. So I think the way we eat food, the way we almost abandon who we are, you know, that it allows you to express something. There's something in the language of love about, you know, language of food that expresses togetherness, sharing food together, tasting from someone else's plate. You know, I think fathers and children, again, you know, Ultramel custard was always my thing, but would always eat it off my dad's plate. And I still don't know why. Like, I was too young to think I wasn't going to get the calories. But it just tasted better. You know, it's like when you steal something off someone else's plate, it just tastes nicer. And that kind of sharing is important. And how we eat, being able to go through certain rituals of food, is important to setting the tone with our relationships, both with our families, but also with our friends and people around us in a greater circle.
Now, Jeanine, I'm fortunate my mother and my wife are able to cook masterful dishes, right? But we see that from the younger generation of guys looking for wives nowadays, their main concern or their main trouble is that, like, the younger generation seem not to be as passionate about cooking as the older generation. Are the younger generation losing that aspect?
I think, sadly, that there is that sense of that loss of almost traditional cooking and values, that sense of being in the kitchen together and passing down recipes, you know, from grandmother to all the way down. And it's something that I think is very, very important because it's part of who we are and it's part of our culture, it's part of our tradition, it's part of, you know, that makeup. So I do think it's important that we look at within communities and passing those things down and saying, you know, this is a very big part of who you are. It's not only about who your friends are and where you go and how you dress, and, you know, food is a very important part of our culture. And if we pass that down, it's trying to get people to almost get it more interactive and say, well, maybe you don't have a mother or a grandmother who can teach you how to cook. I think my mother-in-law is awful. I mean, if I could ban her from the kitchen, I probably would. She's terrible, and she doesn't enjoy it either. So, you know, that's a lost cause. But I was brought up in a kitchen, you know. Actually found my recipe book that I was given at, I was about 3 years old, my first ever recipe book. And I think we need to take young girls under our wing almost and say, okay, well, you might not have the family connections, but we're going to help you. Let's get that back into place and start making it really a more important part of how we raise our kids.
Definitely. And I see I've got an email now from my father. I think he's listening out at work. I think this is in reference to your custard on, you know, eating from your father's plate. He says, yeah, sharing is caring.
The problem with, well, the great thing with that is, of course, that, you know, every time I eat custard, I think of my dad. But still, there's certain foods that if he, like, I used to call it the bell of the pear. I don't like pears particularly. But if he'd cut the top off and sort of do a ding-a-ling-a-ling-a-ling as a little kid, then I'd eat it. And now it's, you know, a million years old, I still will only eat the bell of the pear if my dad cuts it off. And, you know, be careful what you share, because that, you know, people might take it out of your mouth and out of your plate.
Definitely. And I think that's a good lesson also for us. You know, like you're saying, if you eat something and you think of your loved ones, maybe you can share a prayer for them, you know, and remember them in a good light at that time.
Exactly. I think that's so important. You know, it's little foods that so often we share and we take for granted. And one of the programs that I work on is a prison program. I work with juvenile offenders. And, you know, I try and take in, if it's a birthday or if it's something, I'm not a very good baker, but I try and take in, you know, home-cooked stuff. And it's amazing when the guys have been through their sentence and have been released, that they'll often say to me, can you make us those muffins again? Or can we have that because we thought of you when we ate that? And it becomes a taste associated with a good memory. And just remembering that person and offering up a silent prayer of protection for that person, I think, is so important.
Definitely. Janine, we've run out of time. It was such a fascinating discussion. But we're going to have to close it here. We'll maybe pick it up next week sometime. You can choose another wonderful subject to enlighten our listeners with. But you have yourself a wonderful day.
Thank you, and you too. Happy eating.
All right, then. Bye-bye.
Bye.
That's the end of Mind, Body and Chow for today. We hope you enjoyed the program. It will continue tomorrow. Inshallah, Life Coach Sumaya Kubadia joins us after the on-air workout. So stay tuned to Radio Islam International. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. But let's get the official assalamu alaikum for you. Bilal is getting it. Here we go.
Assalamu alaikum. سبيل الدموع سبيل مريح تنهدى يا صاحي كي تستريح وبث الدعاء الخفي الصريح يسعك القضاء الرحيم الفسيح سبيل الدموع سبيل مريح تنهدى هدايا صاحي كي تستريح وبث الدعاء الخفي الصريح يسعك الفضاء الرحيم.